got a rockin' pneumonia and a boogie woogie blues. Monster Marvin, baby, that ain't all. I wanna get the bus to
Weeks ago, 43 weeks ago, that's when we started.
Okay.
If you must know.
All right. I suppose that's right, isn't it?
It's almost a year. We're doing it almost a year.
We're getting up there. It's very close.
Yeah, I mean, didn't expect it.
No.
Didn't expect to be doing it for a year.
No.
Didn't think we were starting a new podcast.
Here we are. I wouldn't have predicted that.
And we probably should go to twice a week. Actually, we used to be kind of twice a week before it was like on weekends only. But we should probably go back to twice a week now that we've got over 250,000 dead in America from coronavirus.
Oh, my goodness.
And almost 200,000 new infections a day. Or, yeah, 200,000. Yeah.
It's crazy how much it has gone up. We're not scientists. I've got questions. Like, are people being... Are people being more complacent?
I guess we're not newsflash. We're not scientists.
Are people being complacent? I mean, I know not everybody's wearing their mask. I know that people are doing things that they shouldn't be doing, but I feel like there have been people doing that since the beginning. So my question is, are there more people being complacent? Or are there more complacency? Is it more rabid?
What's the funny thing is that, you know, preparedness isn't just having enough hospital beds, having enough PPE for hospital and emergency workers, having a populace that will abide by the suggestions that you give them. It's more than that. It's also data collection. It's contact tracing.
Yeah.
It's having the information. It's knowing, you know, who's got it and who doesn't and who's getting it again and whatever. And that's what, you know, a lack of preparedness. Not a scientist, not a government policymaker. So I didn't read the reports that that were cited earlier in this administration and in the last about how we weren't prepared for this. And I have to assume that a lot of what was in those reports is that we don't have the ability to process and collect this data efficiently. And when we cut out the CDC, that doesn't get solved. And so we don't know. I mean, I know that our commander-in-chief has been on a one-man super-spreading spree.
Yep.
So I can't even say how much he's contributed to that. But when you gather 10,000 people in a building, none of them are wearing masks, and then you send them all out to wherever they live in the five-state area, just that alone is a great example. I mean, we don't know. It's fine to do, say, like the NFL, and it's a little weird that nobody's in the stadium. But then also with the NFL, think about the almost, you know, the 1,000 people that you need to just run a National Football League game.
Right.
Just behind the scenes and the water boy and the guy and the trainers and everybody else and where they're going and coming back. And hopefully they're doing their best to follow restrictions because they have to because the league says they do. I don't know. There's just so many places in the chain that it can break down. You know, this is it's not six people in a shotgun shack, and who got bit? Come on, who got bit? The zombies are outside.
Right.
Oh, it was the slimy corporate guy in the pinstripe suit. He got bit. Like, easy, right? It goes way beyond that. We've got millions of guys in pinstripe suits. We have no idea how to keep this. So all you can do is just say, I want to stay alive. I'm going to wear a mask. And if I wear a mask and I don't let anybody throw up on me or whatever, then theoretically, I'm going to be fine.
Right.
And I mean, I think we can see that, yes, I suppose it's, you know, 99.999 whatever percent effective. Yeah, you could somehow get the virus. It gets in. Or you know, it's like condoms. Condoms are 100% effective. The 99% is like people like, oh, did I have it on or did it come off or it's on backwards.
Yeah. Right. Misuse. Right.
Human error. Yeah. So we don't know if like people are making mistakes and, you know, you're touching your eyes or whatever. We just don't know if we can. I mean, all you can do is just trust yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to. And it shouldn't be. It's both trusting yourself to keep yourself alive, but it's also, I know now that I'm not going to spread it to anybody else. That's the other half.
That is the
empathy
half.
Part.
Yeah.
But we've got like an empathy black hole for most of the people in this country who have no desire to protect anybody else.
Do you feel
even
like.
Even though, isn't grandma, sometimes, just sometimes, isn't grandma on the other side of a screen what you want? Isn't this the future that we were hoping for?
Whoa.
I remember when I was very young, This was like the mid-80s, I think. Like the dream was video phones, right? I saw 2001.
Sure.
Happy birthday, Daddy. Right?
They had them. Future too.
They had. I remember I was in a sharper image. Or I think it was just like the fancy gadget part of a JCPenney's or something like that. And they were selling the TV phone. No, it wasn't hooked up. But it had a very small, very bad, like, you know, CCD chip in it that would send the signal through the telephone line to grandma. And I remember the commercial for it, or the print ad I saw, was you talking to grandma on a tiny little postage stamp screen.
Sure, right.
Not very satisfying.
No.
But now you can see grandma in 4K.
Right.
That's enough.
It should be. It should be for a lot of people. Do you think...
If you want to see grandma again.
I mean, I think I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask this question
again. If you
want to
see her next year.
Yeah, I know, right? Exactly. Do you think if we had had a different president when this happened, and I'm not saying Republican or Democrat, but just somebody who listened to science, somebody who was a quote-unquote good example and wore a mask and took it seriously, do you think that the U.S. would be in a better situation than we are now?
Yeah. Whether he would be shot in the street by conservative supporters.
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
Right.
But obviously, those conservative supporters have been whipped into a frenzy by Orange Hitler to this point where going forward, it's going to be tough for anybody. It's going to be tough for a Democratic leader to, quote unquote, unite the country. It'll be tough for a conservative leader who doesn't want to do crazy shit like the last guy did to not do crazy shit because he's got a bunch of whipped up weirdos who want him to do crazy shit.
I know.
So he, and it will be he on the right, he'll feel pressured to be as crazy as the last guy because, you know, that's who you're following.
I hate it.
Yeah, it's bad news.
It's real bad news.
This would all be fixed if, I've been saying it for years, but other more learned people have been saying it for centuries. Maybe the executive being so powerful is not that good of an idea.
Yeah.
Why do we need a king?
Right.
He's just the CEO. But like a CEO, the shareholders can go, get you out of there. You
know,
why does this guy have godlike power? It's stupid. This is a show about movies and disease, not about politics at all, which is why we're going to talk about a movie about politics. Heavily involved with politics.
Yes.
That features almost nuclear Armageddon, or the threat of it, is a side note in the finale of this film.
Yeah.
Because the real Armageddon is going on inside a hollowed out volcano. We did it, everybody.
I know.
Boo, boo. We finally did it. We got our hollowed out volcano for real. In a James Bond movie. The James Bond movie is 1967's You Only Live Twice, starring Sean Connery. In his fifth appearance as James Bond, 007.
Yes. His second to last? Because doesn't he leave and then he comes back?
You're right.
Yay!
He does do that.
Yay. Okay.
And you can tell. I like this movie, but he seems bored.
He's not as into it.
He's bored sometimes in this movie.
I
that's
agree.
Fine. Maybe he just doesn't like Japanese chicks. Why don't you tell us what happens You Only Live Twice.
So You Only Live Twice, it is the space race, and...
Well, there's space races in a lot of Bond films.
Yeah, okay, that's true.
In the late 60s and early 70s.
The Americans have, sent up a rocket, and they're doing some mission in space, and while they're in space, they get, enveloped, well, I should say the rocket gets enveloped in
Pac-Man.
Another rocket with its giant metal maw, and the other guy's hose gets loose and he's just floating in space.
That guy's gone.
And then the Americans blame the Russians. The Russians are like, we didn't do it. And for some reason, the Brits are there because it's a Bond movie mediate this. And they're like saying, well, our intelligence, because I guess the British intelligence is the best intelligence.
A bit of a sticky wicket there.
Right, exactly. It says that the shuttle or craft or whatever, the rocket that swallowed the other rocket, came from somewhere in Japan.
Yes.
So... we're going to basically Bond is, I guess I have to tell a little bit. This is a long movie. I'll try to make it as fast as possible.
It's not really. It's not even 2 hours.
All right. But they're like, our man in Hong Kong can do it. And like, they kill him.
James Bond.
Yes. Bond is dead.
He dies before the credits.
Credits roll. And he's got a burial at sea because he was in the British Navy.
Right.
And the other British Navy officers or who are part of, you know, is it MI6 or is it something else?
It's the British Navy.
The British Navy comes and they get them in scuba suits and bring them aboard a submarine. And they open up his little mummification thing and he's alive. He just had a breathing tube in there and he gets his new orders from M. And basically,
we're sending you to somewhere you've never been. We have to fake your death so no one knows who you are.
Right.
What?
I know.
I'm not going to Piccadilly Circus.
I know.
I'm going to Japan.
Yeah. So he has to go on this mission to Japan, and he has to figure out where this rocket is from and who is behind it and what their dastardly plan is and stop them.
And I don't know if we ever really learn all those details because other things start happening.
Yeah, they do.
We know a Japanese industrialist.
Yes.
Basically, like, this is, you know, the reveal of Blofeld, the erstwhile nemesis to Bond, who has appeared previously in films, but only
his
hands, you know.
Oh, he's in, okay.
I think From Russia with Love is when he's the one who is sending...
I guess I didn't
Klebb
remember that.
And Robert Shaw's character, who I can't remember his name, like Rusty or something like that, out to kill him.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, but this is when we first meet him, and he's played by Donald Pleasance in this movie.
Yes.
And then he's played by Telly Savalas in the next movie.
Yeah.
But then again, Bond is different too, so.
Who played his hands in From Russia with Love?
This was a color role for The Thing. He'd been doing the TV for a while, The Munsters, and he decided that he wanted to... is that the Adams... Crap. That's the Adams family.
Adams family. No, but I knew what you thing. Were doing.
All right, whatever.
That was good.
All right.
I like
so,
it.
So, dumb question, dumb answer.
Oh,
there you go.
I deserved it.
At this point, this is the first Bond movie in a while to have a lower take, box office-wise.
Oh.
Kind of signaling to some, like, oh, people are starting to get sick of the whole spy genre thing of the 60s.
Hmm.
And, of course... you know, Bond would go on to a lot of money and box office returns
in
the next decade and on and on and on. But yeah, this is the first time that he sort of faltered a little bit. And I think that that's me. I don't – love or not a fan. I don't know all the details, but I think maybe that's what, you know, Connery's kind of sick of it and wanted more money for the next one. And they're like, well, it didn't make as much money as last time, so maybe we won't give you the money. He's like,
peace out.
There's a lot of things I can do. I don't have to do this. I'm Sean Connery. I'm going to go make Zardoz.
Which is true.
I know. So.
When did this come out? Sometime in the 70s?
67.
Oh, 67. Okay.
Yeah. And then 69, of course, they came back with George Lazenby in Honor Majesty's Secret Service.
Yes.
This never happens to the other fellow.
Yeah, which they made a lot of meta nods. And we actually... talked about that on Just Enough Trope recently.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
It is directed by Lewis Gilbert, who had directed or would go on to direct a couple more films, The Spy Who Loved Me, and which is a great more film, probably his best, and Moonraker, which is not his best, but it's a fun film. I think that's the one where a guy chews through a cable car.
Wow.
Right? Jaws.
What?
Anyway. And it was screenplays by Roald Dahl.
Like, I did a double take. The Roald Dahl?
Yeah.
The children's book author?
Children's book author and former British Secret Service agent.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So it's good thing
Interesting.
To do.
Interesting.
John Barry, of course, classic, is doing the music. Maurice Binder is back for the credit sequence. Who, you know, this is the guy that came up with, you know, projecting the movie on belly dancers, right?
Yeah.
And for this, it's just like lava ladies.
With, you know, traditional
eyes,
like,
their
like
eyes.
Geisha looking hair.
Yeah.
And so I think silhouette.
Everybody is tired, I think. But it's a movie that is, you know, it only stays in one place. But what a place. Like, it's sweeping,
yeah.
You know? And I think it could have been a little more of a travelogue than it was.
Yeah.
But they take you to Tokyo, and they take you, you know, to the high-rises, and they take you to the back streets.
Yes.
And then they take you to the countryside, and the all the amazing helicopter shots of the landscapes and the volcano and everything. You know, like the helicopter fight is like, you know, exciting.
Pretty cool.
But I was just watching like all the mountains and the camera work and everything they're doing. And then at the very end, they take you to a little fishing village and take you to sort of that side of it. And you see the Amma fishing girls and everything. And so they're just giving you, this is like the 60s businessman view of Tokyo. You know what I mean? Like, show me the good parts.
Right.
Tokyo Tower.
Right. And they took us to a sumo match too.
They took us to not the Osaka Castle, but they took us to another grand sort of
castle. It was Himeji Castle, which is actually the largest castle in Japan. Very big. In Himeji, which is on Honshu.
Yeah. And of course, just to end my point about energy.
Yeah.
And of course, it ends with like one of the biggest like set pieces. Don't give me that Frogman crap. You know, it's hollowed out volcano.
Yeah,
ninjas rappelling down.
Lots of ninjas.
Guys in hard hats shooting them. Construction workers. Of course, you know, Austin Powers took heavily from this movie specifically. Austin Powers, Austin really isn't anyone. Austin is really Austin. Actually, Austin's just like, actually, he's not in like Flint either because he's not Coburn at all. Austin is just Austin. But he draws a lot from, you know, in like Flint. And then sort of visually from You Only Live Twice.
Yes.
And then his, if he was Bond, his Bond is probably more of a Roger Moore type, type Bond.
Yeah, yeah. He's a little goofy. I was just thinking about, like, going back to that scene, just how many extras they had working on that. And those people were actually propelling down.
It was a huge set.
It's amazing. And the set, too. Yeah. It's amazing because now that would all be done with, like, green screens and, like, we'd have extras.
Or you'd just say,
we would, like,
rolled. Can we just write this? Somebody runs on and says this happened. But instead, they just, they did everything. I mean, there are rockets in this film.
Yeah.
There are helicopters. There are autogyros. There are, you know, there's a plane crash. Bond lands a plane and then it explodes. And all of it is accomplished through huge sets at Pinewood and then bigatures, which is not miniatures, but like scale models. You know, so like that plane was not a full-size plane they blew up. It's just probably, you know, maybe 5-6 feet long.
Oh, okay.
But they just make it look really good.
And they call all those bigatures?
Yeah. Miniatures are mini, right?
Yeah.
That's like a Godzilla. No, he crushes the train. But
right.
Yeah, it's a bigature type thing.
I've never heard that before. Interesting.
And then and forced perspective. So you can have like a huge Pinewood thing, and then you've got like the opening to the volcano, but you're either comping in something or you've got something else, you know, in closer to the camera, which is the, you know, the higher part that you're seeing that looks like it's far away, but it's actually closer and that sort of thing.
Very cool. I just thought I thought that they did a really great job. It would have been cool if maybe they put in a little bit more stuff from Japanese culture, but I understand, like, this is a Bond film. This is not, like, a travelogue, you know what I
mean? Yeah, and Japanese culture is the co-star of the film.
That's true.
It is the Bond girl in this case.
Right.
Because they tell, you know, we've got this huge problem, which is somebody is stealing the U.S. and the USSR's astronauts,
mm-hmm.
which is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of, like, having a real good, like, angle or identity or something for Bond, they just tell Bond, go to Japan. He's like, all
right. I know, right?
Then he gets to Japan and immediately talks to the guy that who he is supposed to give him his contact or whatever. This old, you know, former British Army guy.
I think his name is, like, Henderson.
Henderson, who's gone native. You know, he's enjoying the delights of the Orient, you know. But that guy gets killed and Bond's like, I'll just pretend to be the assassin and have them just drive me back to their base. And then I'm just going to, like, I'll just open a safe and, oh, here's a clue. And he's just sort of like, he's just kind of making it up as he goes.
Yeah. And, like, haphazardly actually kind of being successful.
Well,
because he's Bond.
It is a James Bond movie.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you're right. There isn't any plan.
And he runs into, eventually, Tiger Tanaka.
Yes.
Who is the, you know, I don't know if he's M, but he's
kind of
the head
more
of the Japanese Secret Service there.
Yeah.
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 Played by Tetsuro Tamba, who is a very, very famous, long serving Japanese actor.
He was great. I enjoyed him. I knew he was Tiger right away. I mean, obviously they mentioned him before, but I saw the the tiger skin on his office floor, and I was like, this is Tiger.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But I love, there were a lot of fun things, because it's Bond, but like when he's chasing Aki in the, Aki in the train station that I guess is Tiger's personal like train station or what have you. He just like runs after her, or just he just kind of like he like walks and then just he's going down a slide all of a sudden, and that was really fun, like and unexpected, you know.
Yeah, Aki played by Akiko Wakabayashi.
Okay,
who was in a lot of the Toho monster movies.
Oh, okay.
She was in Ghidorah.
Nice.
I think she came back, or she'd been in like a Godzilla movie or two, I think. But yeah, she just, you know, I mean, never a super distinguished career, but was just sort of, you know, that girl in monster movies. She's good in this.
She is good. So her name, Aki, is, it means autumn. And other meanings could be clear or bright. But anyways, I just thought that was interesting.
Hmm.
I thought she did a really good job, too. And I was kind of, I mean, a lot of Bond girls meet their untimely end, right?
She had to work to get killed.
That's true.
Because they do the thing where they try to, you know, poison. First of all, if this is Tanaka's, like, super fortress, like, guys are getting in here on the reg.
Right.
And so the guy tries to do the poison on the thread trick to Bond while he's sleeping. He's sleeping. Just shoot him in the face. But whatever.
It's and not then, like, Sean Connery's like,
oh, no, no, scotch. And he sort of, like, turns his head. But then it would just go on the pillow, right? Like, in Gross Point Blank. But instead, Aki, like, throws herself over. And it just
and
goes.
And, like, opens her mouth and licks her lips. It's yeah. Like, come on.
So that's how that happens.
Yeah.
There's another girl in the film, another quote-unquote Bond girl, I guess, which would be Kissy Suzuki, played by Mie Hama.
Gotcha.
And she's the sort of, she's an agent of Tigers, I guess, but she lives convincingly as a fishing,
girl
in this village.
Yes.
She was in King Kong versus Godzilla.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Very nice.
I think, like, we laugh about how many actors are in Marvel movies. I think Godzilla and monster movies, it's got to be like that in Japan, right?
Probably.
It's like, oh, no, Ghidorah, no, Rodan, no, what? Mothra. Which one are we doing? I don't know.
It's but, like 6 degrees of separation, like people who have been in those films. Yeah, right.
She only acted for a little while, and she retired to write books, and she was a television and a radio host, and I guess probably just was unfulfilled with what cinema could offer a girl like her at that time, which I would totally understand.
Yeah, I would totally understand as well. So, yeah, well, good for her.
Man, what, we can't, that can't be all we have to say about this. I know we're tired too. It's been a long week.
It's not all I have to say about it. I mean,
it's been a long week.
Yeah, I think the Blofeld reveal was really good. I mean, cause he's really menacing. I kind of feel bad for that cat. I mean, that cat actor, what a great cat actor.
It's the 60s. They probably drugged it.
Oh, don't say that.
I'm just guessing.
I'm just like, what cat? Even one that likes to get pet, likes to get stay still and get pet that
Persian
much.
Persian cats are pretty,
I guess,
languorous.
Yeah.
Right?
But there was that one point that you pointed out.
Yeah.
There's like, it's like the attack on the base, there's all these explosions. That cat is freaking
out.
Yeah,
the first couple rocket bullets that hit the impregnable control room. I think maybe Pleasance was helping it out a little by grabbing it funny, but the cat's like, ooh. Not doing this now.
I know. There were a couple of guys who were just like brick walls in this, like Hans. And the guy who I think was, I don't know if it was like the same sumo guy that he talked to. Probably not. But the guy that he fights in Osato's office that he knocks unconscious. I think he just knocks him unconscious.
He was like
a brick wall.
You know who that was?
No.
Can you hear it? Can you smell it? If Japan smells what the rocks, grandfather is cooking.
Whoa.
Peter Maivia.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow. That's cool.
He was one of... they did a pretty good job with... and not that... I mean, it's just a movie. Whatever. Nobody really cares who's who. But, like, Cai Qin is a Chinese woman that played the Chinese agent at the beginning of the film. And
that's
then
good.
There's a lot of Japanese actors in the film. But then yeah, they're also like, really we could take a big American Samoan guy. We could do that, too. So, yeah. So, Peter Maivia.
That's cool. I was going to say, too, like... I thought Henderson was kind of an interesting guy, and I would have liked to have seen him more, but I can also appreciate them wanting to give it over to Tiger and have, like, an actual, like, Japanese character, Japanese actor be, like, Bond's main contact in Japan.
Yeah.
I think that that was a good choice.
Yeah, I agree. It is set up like, oh, I'm going to be the guy that you're going to keep coming back to in the film. It's like, yeah. Oh, nope, dead.
Well, and he just gets kind of like silent. And it's like, well, I can kind of figure out something has gone horribly wrong here.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think about, like, what else. I enjoyed this movie. And I don't know why I'm not having things that I want to talk about.
I don't want to say that it's run of the mill. But I feel like it's maybe a bad idea.
Whoa.
Japan is – I read the book. I've read most of the books. I don't want to be treated any differently. And
how does it compare to the
book?
And
even – well, it's very accurate.
Oh, that's good.
It's very close to it except for the things that – first of all, Bond is a lot like meaner and sort of grittier in the books.
Hmm.
And so this is the more like, yeah, that's fun, Bond. And the ending is totally different because while they're escaping from the volcano, he gets hit in the head and forgets who he is. And I can't remember if Kissy is an actual agent. I think she just might be somebody they roped in to help them. And she's like nurses him back to health and he forgets that he's James Bond and he ends up just living with her in this village for a couple years. So when the next book happens, which I don't know if it is on Her Majesty's, it probably is. I can't remember. They have to go get him and, like, bring him back.
Oh, and kind of bring him back to reality.
Yeah.
Yank him out of his
nice but even in that, life. Even in that book, it's more... We've talked about this on, I think, all of our shows at this point, but it's more just the sort of 60s white guy's fascination with the Orient, the chrysanthemum and the sword, the real Don Draper going to see this movie. I know he went to see this movie on
I'm sure Mad you're Men. Probably right. Five, I just don't remember.
I think the season four or season five finale of Mad Men is called You Only Live Twice, and they play this song, and it's when he proposes to Megan. And I think that's the season where he's been reading the Chrysanthemum and the Sword, and they're doing this deal with a Japanese company.
Yes, I remember that too.
Sushi, yeah.
Okay.
So it's just more. It's even the book. It's like that. It's just like a white guy going, "I don't know about this." Well, that's weird. What's this? And that's just not to me. That's not as interesting as playing off these old Cold War things or Bond having a score to settle. This is more just like, huh, what a weird... You're not Michael Palin. You know what I mean? Like, what a weird country. Oh.
Yeah.
I find that as compelling because all we can do is just go knock down all the pegs of like, they eat weird. They talk weird. Oh, the women are different. And that's all you can really do. And it's a movie that where they're snatching space capsules. And Blofeld is he's got a hollowed out volcano. He's revealing himself.
I know.
They have reserve astronauts.
Do you think, I was thinking too, I don't know what predates what, but like, do you think in the comics, do you think like AIM was partially inspired by this movie? I mean, I know there's guys in like red, yellow, and white suits, but I just like the yellow suits in like this kind of like weird factory place or something like that.
James Bond and 60s spy quiche or chic, whichever French word you want to use, inspired the hell out of the creation or at least the development of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Sure. That makes sense.
This is probably Jim Steranko's favorite movie. And when he took over, you know, Nick Fury, it was this before, but he really leaned into the, it's my happening, it freaks me out, you know, like flying cars and gas pens and stuff like that.
Okay. So, that's all very Bond.
Yeah.
Which
is still, we've talked about this a lot, but do it now. do it now. In another 5 years, the 60s will be even farther away. They'll be 60 years away,
mm-hmm.
and people won't remember it, right? Like it's fading from our memory. Now, why are we still doing World War II stuff? I don't know. But this is going to be, you know, people don't do like, oh, in the 1912s, we were to do, and we were boop a doop. Although, wait for our next movie. And do you know what I mean? Like, it's such a cool period. Yeah, we had Mad Men, but that's already, you know, being forgotten. It's moving into our past. And so if you're going to do something cool in the 60s with your action movie or your spy movie, like, do it now. That's what I say.
Okay. I mean, I say go
Fast
for
and
it.
Fast and the Furious Zero. We meet Dom's dad.
Wow.
He's driving. What's he driving?
God, I don't know.
Say
I
like a
know.
66 like Corvette, right? But that's like a Stingray or something like that. But that's too. No, there's got to be like a better car that's like, huh, you like a Stingray? Check this out.
I'm sure there is. I know next to nothing about cars, so I'm not.
Remake
the
Bullet.
Ugh.
But period. Just remake Bullet like it's 1971.
Wow.
That's what I say.
Okay, man. I don't know.
Okay, look.
I love Steve McQueen.
I'm tired. You're tired.
I love Steve McQueen. I just don't know if it's a good idea to remake Bullet. That's all I'm saying.
Well, he won't be there. Well, anything else you want to say about it? Oh, we didn't even talk about Miss Brandt, who is just another. She seemed like
I am a sexy bad woman.
It's just like a Pussy Galore also ran. Like Pussy Galore also had flat ironed hair and flew a plane and was a lot better. And it's like, oh, we just need another girl.
She didn't even know it was Bond who she like.
No, they don't.
Like,
for some reason, they don't know it's Bond because this like fake death thing really worked.
Yeah, except for Blofeld, he knows right away. Like,
well, no, but he knows because of the gun.
I know.
Yeah. Mr. What's his name? Owns the entire company.
Osato. Yeah.
Takes a picture of the gun like the first time he meets him, and then like an hour later in the movie, he's like. You were supposed to know that was James Bond, idiot. So,
I know.
I'm not going to kill you. I'm going to kill Miss Brandt, but go kill James Bond.
I know. Meow. Oh, I wanted to mention, Bond kills Hans, and he goes into the pond with the piranhas that we've seen earlier.
Yeah, your little gem you pull out of the movie that Bond never saw the
He never
piranhas.
Saw it.
Well, he sees the guy getting eaten now. It's the best.
Yeah,
there's a lot of lame one-liners in the movie, but it's the best.
It's a great one-liner. I just wish, when Blofeld had shot Osato, he had gotten, they were kind of close to where that area was. He had gotten, knocked into the
thing. Maybe
he
taped it and he showed it to Bond, off-screen. He's like, check this out, Mr. Bond. yes, they yellow-face Bond in this.
Oh,
look,
yeah. We got to talk about that.
He's a spy. He's not trying to be...
I know.
He's not trying to be sensitive. He's
they
trying to infiltrate
do this
someplace.
Now, they just
no, they'd hire a Japanese guy.
I know.
MI6, but our man in Tokyo would be a Japanese. They'd just hire Tiger.
Right.
Tiger's got a whole army of ninjas who could probably definitely can do this.
Right. And it would or they would just say that Bond got plastic surgery and
it would
be
the
a
book,
Japanese actor.
In
or
the
something.
Book, it's a long process. They use a lacquer. I don't know if this would work.
Whoa.
But they lacquer his skin, give him a spray tan basically.
Okay.
And cut his hair, and he's still he's not as tall as Sean Connery. Bond's 6'2", I think. But they're hunch over, you're still going to be huge. And just don't talk to anybody. They gave him a card to show people that says, I am a deaf mute. I was hit in the head when I was a kid or something like that.
Sure.
But it doesn't, he's still not going to pass. So whatever.
I know.
I think they also say that he's half.
Half Japanese?
Half English or something like that.
Okay. All right.
Wow, that guy sticks out like a sore thumb.
I
Let's
know,
send
right?
him in to infiltrate. And then
this
also,
is a good idea.
We're really running up against, this is the late 60s, we're running up against the toupee problem. There's a lot of, I think this is the last underwater scenes you're going to see from Sean Connery in a Bond movie. I could be wrong, but he is underwater in Never Say Never Again, but they've improved toupee technology by that point. Because there's a lot of so lush, and then he's in the water and it's like, but yeah, Sean Connery's like that cat. He don't like water for that reason. And the Incredibles, I think, got their little globe cars from this movie.
Yes, those were fun.
Yeah.
I also enjoyed, what was it, Nelly, the one-person helicopter that Bond flies. Nelly, yeah. Little Nelly. That was pretty great.
And make sure her father comes with.
Yes.
Like, all right, 007, pay attention.
I know. I liked his little outfit when he came. Yeah,
that's the only thing he did in this movie.
I know.
But, you know, it's good to have him around.
Yeah, yeah. And he was mopping his head. I thought that was good. They didn't really emphasize this that much, but if they were there in the summer, Japan tends to be very hot.
Yeah, so that's why
that was accurate.
That's why Kissy Suzuki was able to infiltrate a Spectre base in her underwear at night, because it's still hot. It's still hot. You know, that Tatami. You know, you got to flip it over. Hot. All right, enough of that. Let's talk about your film.
Yes.
What's your film?
My film is The Princess and the Frog.
Yeah.
Yes.
From 2009, the 49th Disney animated feature.
Yes.
Based, of course, on a novel, The Frog Princess.
Yes. I didn't know it was technically a novel. Oh, it's a novel? I didn't get that. I didn't know that.
Well, I mean, obviously, it's based on a
fairy tale, right.
But the novel is by Edie Baker. It was published in 2002, and it adds the twist of, it's not New Orleans or anything like that, but it adds the twist of her, the princess, turning into a frog herself and then having to sort of figure that out.
Okay.
That's why it's called The Frog Princess. But they turn this into Princess and the Frog, and you go, why not just call it The Frog Princess? But thinking about it, the princess and the frog is her. Both of those describe her, the titular character, who is not the main character of this movie.
You don't think so?
This is hands down an ensemble piece and might be the prince's film. But we'll talk about that after I tell you what happens in this film. Tiana lives in New Orleans.
Yes.
She is, because it's the real world, 1913 New Orleans, she is the daughter of the housekeeper of the richest people in town. Not much is made out of that.
Well, her mom's a dressmaker. I don't know if she's technically the housekeeper, but
I see a lady in an apron in a white person's house.
All right.
I get out that shit.
Okay.
But anyway, she's going to make him a dress, sure. So anyway, that she is, you know, it's implied that she's raised along with the insipid white child of the richest person in town, played by John Goodman, who is animated just as, they could have just, you know, like Roger Rabbit, let's reverse Roger Rabbit, just have John Goodman walk in.
I know.
Because that's basically what they did animation-wise.
Yep.
And I love it. Fun fact, John Goodman was in Tremé, so it's a lot of New Orleans stuff for John Goodman.
I didn't know that.
They are basically raised together. They love the story of the princess and the frog. We go back to Tiana's house when she's young. We learn that she, you know, has a mother and father who love her very much, but of course they live in the other part of town, the shotgun house part of town. She loves cooking with her father.
Yes.
That's all we need to know. We fast forward, you have to wish on a star, but not just wish, work for your dreams.
Right.
We fast forward 15 or so years. World War I has come and gone and has claimed the life of Tiana's father, and it's just her and her mother now, and she's working all these jobs to raise money to open her own restaurant, which was her father's dream, but is her dream as well, called Tiana's Place.
Yes.
And as she is doing this, she's basically having to, you know, continue to serve the people of the town, especially the rich people in town, who want her to bake a bunch of beignets and cater their party that they're having, because Prince Naveen of somewhere fake country is coming into town, and the her friend, who is now a young woman herself, wants to marry him, and that's her dream. And so we have that. The prince comes into town. He's the typical Disney hero. He's Thomas O'Malley, the alley cat. And he's got a servant that hates him, which is becoming more and more present, I think, in Disney films. It's not like, oh, thank you, faithful servant. It's like, oh, my servant stabbed me in the back. Hold on to that thought, because as our Prince Naveen enjoys playing jazz and picking up on chicks in New Orleans, he runs into the Shadow Man.
Yeah.
Who might have another name, but it's the Shadow Man.
Yeah, right.
Played by Keith David. Played wonderfully by Keith David.
Yeah.
And he says he'll tell them his fortune. He sees money in their future, both of them, because the prince has been cut off by his parents, and he has to either get a job, God no, or find some money. So he's kind of looking for a princess to marry himself.
Yes.
The rich young woman of daughter of John Goodman.
Yes. I think her name was Lottie?
Dickory Dockery Doc.
Yeah.
He gets turned into a frog. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
And his servant gets turned into him.
Yep.
Because he wants to live out the dream that life that the prince has.
Mm-hmm.
Frog runs into Tiana, says, look, you got to kiss me. You know how this works. It's a story, so it must be true. Right. You got to... Vampires, right? You kill them like this, right? It's very meta, you know? And he says, he thinks she's a princess because she's wearing this great dress that her friend gave her, and she's wearing a tiara.
Yes.
She kisses him and turns into a frog herself, because apparently this is a contagious curse.
Yeah, apparently.
The two of them run off into the swamp, run into all kinds of swamp troubles.
Yes.
And have to get back to being human somehow.
Yes.
Human again. No, wait. That's the Beauty and the Beast. That song that they wrote for the movie version? Or the director's cut of the animated version?
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
What? I'm not familiar with
that. The reason
that
I bring it up is because...
Yes. I think
let's
I
get the bad stuff out of the way.
Let's
get the bad stuff
ahead.
Out of the way. This is a super derivative of many, many movies in the Disney canon.
Yeah, I don't disagree. Not completely anyways, yeah.
It's like a Little Mermaid thing where the bad guy becomes the good guy, you know? So it's like Ursula becomes like a hotter Ariel and
mm-hmm.
she's going to marry Eric first.
Mm-hmm.
You've got that with the servant and like trying to marry the girl. You've got turn you into an animal to teach you a lesson, Emperor's New Groove type situation. I didn't want to make a list because I didn't want to be a jerk about it. But as we go through, I'll probably be remembering or pulling out some other ones. Also, you wanted to do this. You wanted to make a movie featuring a fantastic cast of mostly all black actors.
Yes.
And set it in New Orleans.
Yes.
And emphasize the economic disparity. And the movie does nothing
really
with it, really.
Touch upon it besides the opening. And then there's like this one song that's a little bit, I think that like takes us into, you know, the flash forward, talking about New Orleans and it talks about it just a little bit. It says something like everybody has dreams, like rich people, poor people, but that's about it. And I don't know like the lyrics completely, but they don't really go into it that much. We just know that Tiana is working very hard as a waitress, working two jobs, and she's saving lots of money, even though she's still really good friends. Like, I think her name is Lottie. I don't know. So why couldn't she ask her for a loan or something? Like, that's not even...
It's not even floated.
No.
I mean, you could... Tiana has...
She might not want
to. Prideful.
Yeah, she might not want
to. She's proud of her accomplishments. And
right.
Right, but they... But I think it's for kids. You know, they don't think about that.
Maybe not.
You've also... Here's another one. You've literally got a animal named Louie,
mm-hmm.
who sings a song about wanting to be like you, perhaps walk like you, perhaps talk like you.
Yeah, you're right.
Perhaps play the trumpet like Louis Prima.
Yeah,
or Louis Armstrong,
right.
Like you.
Yeah.
Which is a great number, but at the same time, I'm like, are you guys doing a thing? Is this are we at an anniversary of something? Is this a Disney anniversary where it's okay to like do all this stuff?
The best hits, yeah. Yeah, I totally get what you're saying.
That being said,
yeah,
I love this movie. This movie is so good. I can't believe
it too.
All the bullshit in the press about this film killed my enthusiasm to see it.
I think that must have been what it was for me too, because I don't know what it. Like,
and if you had turned off this review 30 seconds ago, you would have been like, "I don't want to see this movie too."
Yeah.
So it's tough to get the messaging about a film right, and I think it's possible. I don't know, man. I've been really having a reaction or a response, mm-hmm. an allergic reaction to like the relentless criticism of the left, of which I'm a card-carrying member.
Yeah,
but you know, we infight and we attack each other over the smallest things, and they don't have that in the right. You know, they just have Trump flags on the truck.
Right.
And, you know, we're better. you can stop listening now if you don't agree. But, you know, you run into things where people go, oh, so the first black princess is going to be, you know, slinging hash, you know, as a job or whatever, you know, or like, oh, something that I complain about. The first black princess is going to have her movie taken over by bugs and animals and people and another guy.
Right. I did think about that a little yeah. bit. Or how, oh, the first black princess is going to spend like most of the movie as an animal.
As a, not a black woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was another thought that I had.
All those remain on the board, but if they're the first and only thing on that you see on the board, you miss, like, a fantastic film that has some of the best music that I've seen in a modern Disney film and is funny. There are very few
very
lame
funny.
Jokes. Did you think that you would be, when we started the film, did you think that in an hour 15 you would be crying over a firefly dying?
No.
Yeah. Yeah. A firefly that when it comes on, you go, oh, okay, this is the caricature of, like, toothless rednecks living in the swamp. And you, and then, like, 40 minutes later, no, Ray, don't die.
Why aren't there more stuffed animals and figurines of Ray?
Oh,
that's
man.
What I want to know. Is it because he's
kind of... I'd
kinda,
buy an amiibo of Ray.
Is he kind of... Is it because he's a little ugly? Like, he's kind of ugly, but he's, like, kind of so ugly he's cute.
One of the characters is a literal alligator.
I know, but I, like, I love Louis because, like, I love Ray, too. I like both of them. But I love Louis because they set it up really nice, right? Because, like, they almost get attacked by a whole bunch of alligators or crocodiles, like, the night before. And then they meet Louis, and, like, they think they're going to get attacked again, and he's, like, so excited that Naveen is playing this song that he recognizes
right.
and he pulls out his trumpet and he's like the most lovable, like non-threatening, like crocodile you could ever meet.
Little
and,
Bug's Life too.
Yeah, a little bit. So, a little bit.
Just, sorry,
little
just
bit.
Still pointing out.
Yeah, I did like how the lightning bugs helped them.
Yeah, that was
find
great.
The way and everything,
and it doesn't make any sense. None of it makes any sense because, like, the frogs can talk because they've been magically transformed into frogs.
Mm-hmm.
But then other animals talk, and the other animals, I guess, can't talk to people, but they could basically talk amongst themselves.
To other animals,
but then a literal alligator can his fingers can operate a trumpet, and so
yeah.
it's like a heightened reality. And then a firefly dies and becomes a star. I'm willing to accept.
I know, right?
I almost kind of want. This is something that I had a comment about. There isn't like a big opening number. And when the credits come on, they're just like, it's the Princess and the Frog. Get over it. And let's keep going. Was this at one point thought of like of going to TV?
I don't think so.
There's an element of the production that feels a little second rate to me.
That not quite blockbuster.
Because normally you would have, yeah, you would, if you're going to open up on New Orleans, it's, where's the Robin Williams speech, right? Like, New Orleans, it's a city of music, of mystery and magic, and maybe some things happen that you wouldn't expect, you know, and have the Mama G swamp lady character, you know,
yeah.
do that or something like that. And then we said, okay, fine. So I believe that an alligator can play a trumpet. Fine.
No, I see what you're saying.
Because the whole movie rotates around, like, why is that frog talking to me? But it's like, bitch, animals are having a whole civilization outside of the city.
Well, I like that, too. Like, right? Like, they set up really early a lot of the characters wishing upon a star. And then, like, later, Ray being in love with that star and naming that star Evangeline.
And they all start calling it Evangeline.
I know, which is super
really
sweet.
Yeah.
And then, like, but, like, the first time that we see Tiana wishing on that star, you know, she had just heard the story of the Frog Prince, like, before, and she looks over after she's done wishing, and there's a frog there, and she freaks out. And then as an adult, we see her wishing on it again, and she sees a frog, and her first reaction is like, oh, come on. And I thought that was really great. And then it's Naveen. So,
yeah. You know, the Shadow Man, when he's telling the future of Prince Naveen, is like, you know, I see the green in your future.
Yeah, I noticed that. Yeah. He's a frog. Or her. I see.
But I'm mad because we depicted a, you know, a voodoo magic, and it's...
I've heard a lot
what
of...
What is this, Live and Let Die?
I've heard a lot of criticism of that, too. Do you, I mean...
The thing is that he's... I don't know, I guess it's real, but whatever. You've been to New Orleans.
I have.
I don't know if it was like this in 1913, let's say 1940 or whatever. Be another war on.
Right.
everybody there is there. It's they're performing all the time, whether it's Mardi Gras or not. They're street musicians.
Yes,
there's people selling
true.
You things.
That's very true.
So it's like, I think that they maybe could have played up. We don't really get a sense of the Shadow Man. And why he's we know why he's doing this, because he's already promised
his soul
to hell, and so he's in trouble if he doesn't, you know, make the money. A capitalist commentary.
Yeah.
But like, if you get more of an idea of him as like a sideshow man, as a huckster type thing, maybe it would be like, well, then it's no, that's not gonna work either. I don't know.
Not
look,
great
man, it's tough.
Yeah.
Can't, let's just all take our little lib hats off and just enjoy like this. This movie, it's not trying to hurt anybody.
Well, and then
I don't think this movie punches down on anybody.
I was wondering, I mean, like,
although they do take an old white guy and make a black man out of him. They literally magic blackface or whiteface. Blackface?
Well,
brownface, because he's a Brazilian prince or something.
Right. I know, I was thinking about that too. Although
we've gone up our own ass,
but like,
in terms of cultural sensitivity,
when he like starts transforming back and like his ear and then his butt gets like really big, like that was funny. I'm just saying,
yeah, it was
like from the basis,
but the last thing to change was his skin color.
No, you're right. I know.
So they blacked him up.
They did. No, they totally did.
Let's talk about white people. Did you notice that the rednecks, and nobody's mad about that.
I know, right?
Like the rednecks that are trying to kill and eat the frogs are the Three Stooges?
No,
there's a bald one. There's one with a bald cut. And then there's one with like curly red hair that goes out from the sides of his
head. Oh, no. I didn't notice that. Do you think that like their personalities fit the Stooges too, in your opinion, or were they there's just more their look?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, Larry, people say that Moe is the meanest one, but Larry has a dark side. he's got a streak of evil in him. I don't know. What'd you think about Oprah?
Oprah was in this?
Oprah was the mom. Oprah mom.
Oh, I thought she was great. I thought she was really
not
good.
In it much.
No, she wasn't in it much. But
was that the Wrinkle in Time? Is like nobody's ever turned the Oprah up to 10. Let's do it. I bet she's not even in that one so much.
Wrinkle in Time.
Yeah.
Well,
that's my next pick.
Oh boy, she's one of the. I don't remember what they're called. They're not
the sisters.
They're magical beings. I don't know what they're not.
They're not magical beings. It's Tesseract power.
I forget what it is. I read the book.
What's
read
it
the book.
And who's it and
right.
When's it?
Right. And they're the
but nobody
three
asks
sisters.
How's it?
Yeah.
Dumb.
I don't know. We'll have to check that out.
I like the end. I like the fact that they take so long explaining to her, like, the plot of the movie, the white girl that has to kiss him, that she's like, I'll do it. Kiss. Oh, we're too late.
I know.
Thanks, Obama.
But I thought it was really sweet that they decided to get married, and stay, they were like, we're going to stay frogs and we're going to get married and have their little frog wedding in the swamp and surrounded by all their animal friends. And then they kiss and they become human again because now that she married him, she is a princess. So she kissed a princess.
Fun technicality, but you know, also jammed in like at the very end.
It is.
It's like another ending. Because them just being frogs, I don't want that ending, but you're kind of like...
You're okay with
settling
it.
On that ending.
Yeah.
But this is the sort of thing where they go, no, we can't be together. It's like, oh, you're right. And then she walks away. She gets on the train platform and the train goes off and he's sad and the train... The end goes by. I don't know how to describe it. She's still there on the platform. And it's
right.
It's
I know, we are
together.
Yeah, right.
It's just that, only with a giant animal wedding.
No, you're right. You're right. I did really like her dress at the end, though. I don't know.
I thought Mama was okay.
Just okay?
Milana got this right in that Jemaine Clement's crab character, I don't remember his name, don't. Do it, but you could just cut him out, right? Like, he doesn't really need to be in the movie. They have to go into the quote-unquote belly of the beast at some point, because they have to get something from him. I don't remember what it is. His hook, right?
Right, something like that.
So it's like, this is the big, like, I'm the boogie-woogie man from Nightmare on Christmas, Nightmare on Christmas Street,
Christmas,
or whatever.
Nightmare Before Christmas.
Right. This is that scene, right?
Yeah.
It, you know, you have it in musicals. It's like just for, you know, an outlandish character. And that's what this is what her thing is. But her song was okay. And her design was like, and she was kind of, she seemed like kind of hastily drawn to me. Like she just didn't seem, she didn't seem like she was as exciting and well drawn as the other characters in the movie. And I'm like, if we're going to, she's the Wizard of Oz.
Another
thing they kind of stole from. Yeah. Because everybody goes to get something and they get something they really need instead of what they really want.
Right.
And we're going into the swamp to just to reach her, and we get old lady.
I thought some of the stuff that she did was really funny.
The bottle thing was cool.
Like when she like first meets them, and she's like, you know, we find out that she's blind, and she's like, but she's kind of, she's really smart too, right? Like, so she's like, all right, who sold their soul to the Shadow Man or whatever? And they all point at Naveen, and it's like, well, she can't see that, but it's, it was another
blind jokes.
All right, good point.
Somebody else is mad.
Good point.
Liberals,
I didn't think about that.
Thanks, Obama. Liberals destroyed a beautiful movie by Disney. So if you ever skip this one like I did, go see it. Is this the latest movie chronologically? No, Lilo and Stitch, I suppose, is probably present day, right? Otherwise, all Disney films are set in the past, but this one is set in the 20th century.
I'm trying to think. Yeah, Lilo and Stitch, I think, is pretty much modern day. There has to be other ones that
are Pixar movies, like
that are modern day, right? Pixar for sure.
Toy Story.
I'll have to think about it. I don't know.
I've already thought about it. Anastasia is set, of course, at the end of the Russian Revolution, so that would start after this one. This one starts, but this one does go forward in time.
But that's also not technically a Disney movie, is it?
Or it is now
because it's
now.
Fox.
Yep. I told you I thought about this.
Wow. All right. Shows you what I know.
Well, I'm out of things to say. So 2.5 minutes of James Bond impressions. So like I can't do it because it's not ready. But I've been working on my Pierce Brosnan one. And the thing about Pierce Brosnan is like I don't know what he's like if you just talk to him. Like, does he have like a brogue if you just talk to him on the street?
I don't know.
But as James Bond, he's trying so hard to hide like his Irishness that it's just super Irish, but it's in a subtle, like thin beam transmission. Like when, once you hear it, you go, oh my God, it's so Irish.
Yeah.
Connery, 5 films in, he was kicking it around a little bit, especially in the briefing scene. Like he was a little bit, but this tiger Tanaka know what the thing, you know, he's like, it's coming out a little bit. So does M, I know it becomes a running joke, but like M just brings his office everywhere.
Apparently.
So can you imagine
and
like.
And Moneypenny.
Yeah, a half a dozen seamen like carrying just armfuls of books and like a compass.
And an oak desk.
and a telescope to put in this cabin. Yeah.
I did have a question just really quick about the Princess and the Frog, I guess, at least related to that. Are there any depictions of voodoo in media that people feel are respectful or
the
accurate?
Serpent and the Rainbow.
Are you being serious or
no?
Oh, okay.
Although that was supposedly based on a book by a guy who experienced, I mean, not the fictional elements, but all the things that happened in that book happened to him.
Okay.
Or to somebody that
I mean, because voodoo is a real thing. It's
there's
not...
voodoo. There's two different types of voodoo. There's VOODOO and there's VODU. VODOU.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you can't just go Caribbean religion. Blam, we got it. It doesn't work like that.
No, it doesn't.
Why not? Well, that's it. Before we do any more damage.
Yeah.
Talking about things we got no idea about.
Right.
Two culturally insensitive movies. We'll be back in the future.
Oh my gosh.